Welcome to the party. I'm Sam Ekstrom with Locked On Sports Minnesota. On today's show, I tell you how the Vikings are risking their Sleep Number partnership with their London plan.
Luke Inman, Superior Sports Talk. Apparently, I'm the best gambler of the group. Later today, I'll give you the lock of the week.
This is Arif Hassan with Pro Football Network. I am reporting in London for King and Country.
And I'm Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. I will soon be in London, and I will hunt Arif down.
All of that and so much more coming up on a London-centric Minnesota football party.
Locked On Sports Minnesota podcast. It's endless Minnesota Vikings talk with the diverse voices of your local experts. It's time for the Minnesota football party. It's your guys hanging out talking next level Vikings football. Plus the biggest names in Minnesota football for the Minnesota football party. And it starts now.
Hello, hello, hello. It's the Minnesota Football Party. Welcome in. My name's Sam Ekstrom of Locked On Sports Minnesota on Twitter at Sam Ekstrom, joined by the usual group. It's Luke Inman, Superior Sports Talk at Luke underscore Spinman. It's Arif Hassan of Pro Football Network. He's in London at Arif Hassan NFL. Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings at Luke Braun NFL. Today, I've got so many good stats to share, so many topics. Is Garrett Bradbury good? Why is Justin Jefferson getting shut down? What Saints players are going to be injured in this game? But remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube, and we're also on the all-new Amazon Fire and Roku Locked On Sports Minnesota apps. Download and watch us literally all day long. Arif is in London. Your reception is surprisingly good. Welcome in, Arif, from abroad. What time is it there?
I don't know, like 4:30 or something like that. I don't really keep track of those kinds of things. What time is it?
Time. It's not, never time is a flat circle.
Time is an illusion, okay?
And Luke Braun, when are you headed over? What's your plan?
I will be leaving tonight, getting there somewhere around dinner time at 4:30. And trying my best to avoid that, the horrific Kirk Cousins mural.
I have to find that. Someone in the replies mentioned where that is, so I'm going to have to hunt that down.
Oh, my God.
The mural? It's beautiful.
Kirk Cousins mural. Hey, LeBron has one in Cleveland. Kirk has one in London.
It looks like he's in
equally
pain.
Important figures to those respective cities, of course.
Yes.
Hey, last time he was there, he tied.
Oh, I've heard there has been
he's 0-0-1. He's 500 everywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Nothing more British than that, right? A draw?
Like I've heard
they suffer to a draw. That's extremely British.
Arif, I've heard the Vikings fans have traveled pretty well over there. Have you seen a lot of purple when you're out on the streets compared to how many Saints fans are over there right now too?
No, I haven't seen any. Like, okay, so here's the thing.
No.
There are a lot of Vikings fans in the United Kingdom. It's like a top five fan base here. But like, there's just like a lot of people in London. And so you're just not going to get that many, Vikings fans walking around the street. I've seen, maybe three or four walking around the street, which is, I guess I haven't seen any Saints fans. But so I guess in that sense, they outnumber them like 5-0 or infinity to none, right? Like it's clearly an overwhelming favorite. But for the most part, you're just not seeing any American football fans. I saw somebody was playing the Bills-Dolphins game on the train the other day, and I was like, that's wild. Is he like an American that's just like here, or is he like a fan or whatever? And he had like a Bills phone case. When he turned around, he was wearing a Bills shirt. So I'm gonna assume that he's like living it up this week. He's a British person who finally gets to watch football in person, and he's just having the time of his life. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, most of the time people are here, they're asking me questions like I know where stuff is. It's just wild. I don't know, man. The people here have like,
you fit right in.
London has not progressed as a society. The people here are lost, they're confused, and they don't know about American football.
So, Arif, you said you can't sleep. And Luke Braun, yeah, we're going to use you as a test case because Luke Braun, you're basically on the level of athlete that the Vikings are, more or less, give or take. So if struggle, you're on the Vikings travel schedule. So if you struggle to like get with the time and shake the jet lag,
are you replicating the Vikings travel schedule one for one?
Is this for a story or a podcast?
Like almost no. It's just my flight just happened to be about 2 hours after the Vikings flight takes off.
Well, we're giving you a story. Take it.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm like actually kind of curious. Like how
during the hours the Vikings
Sunday?
Practice, you should go for a run for that exact amount of time, so that you're going through the athletic paces that right. they are. You should have a strict curfew on Saturday night.
If your athletic capability a week from now is, or a week from next Sunday, is at the high level it needs to be, because that's the important part, right? Like that was the whole reason,
right?
So that their circadian rhythm is not too interrupted when they come back.
So you have to practice and work out next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday as well, Luke. That's all you have to do.
Yeah. It's important for the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Work out.
And we will take into account.
Definitely will do consecutive days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's 2 hours of debt that Luke has in addition because he's coming from the West Coast. So we'll weight it a little bit differently, but that sounds like a good project for Luke. Here's my first question to kick off the show. Is Garrett Bradbury good? Now, he is sixth in Pro Football Focus center rankings. He is sixth in run blocking. He's 24th in pass blocking. Is this a turning over of a new leaf for Garrett Bradbury? Luke Inman.
Man, I mean, heading into the year, the interior O-line was a lot of people's number one concern. If this offense was going to work, Kirk needs a clean pocket. If you were to tell me through 3 weeks, PFF's got Bradbury with a nearly 70 grade in the sixth best center, as you mentioned, the NFL, I think a lot of people would have either slapped you or maybe kissed you, Sam. I mean, Bradbury and this offensive line, just as a whole, has been, I think, by far the biggest surprise in a good way for the Vikes. Brian O'Neill, number one tackle and pass block win rate in the NFL. Him and Darisaw, fourth and seventh best tackles and run block win rate. But just as a whole, this entire unit, third in the NFL in pass block win rate, sixth overall in run block win rate. So it's not just one or two guys right now. Maybe the Darisaw hype was real. Maybe O'Neill starts to get recognized as one of the better right tackles in the league. Ezra's been solid. But all of them, you're right, Sam, I think, expectations going in, maybe no bigger surprise than Bradbury, how well he's held up thus far. And it's been, over a decade plus? You got to go all the way back to the Brett Favre era in 2009 when fans have been able to say they feel good about this offensive line. So, I mean, maybe give props to Kwesi for rolling the dice on Bradbury thus far through 3 weeks, taking a swing on Ingram so early in the draft. But probably got to write Rick Spielman a little thank you card, too, for hitting on O'Neill and Darisaw and Ezra. But Bradbury, is he good? I mean, I think that's a little bit of a reach right now, Sam, but certainly we'll take what we can get a lot better than our expectations heading into the season.
It's not like the bar was that high to clear.
That's the thing.
Right, because he's always been pretty good at run blocking. He just needed to not be atrocious, Arif, as a pass blocker. He's 24th out of 38. That's not great. It's not atrocious, but it's good enough to at least pass the eye test. And he's now surrounded by, like, Cleveland is 20th. I think Ingram is 45th. And the tackles have both been really good, which spits out a pretty decent offensive line that I think is fourth in run blocking, 15th in pass blocking.
When you say, like, Cleveland is 20th, that's among all guards, right? So that's different than
correct.
Not 20th among centers. Yeah. So that is a substantially better ranking than the equivalent for centers. I would say, no, he's not good right now, but he is a little bit better than he was last year, I think. It reflects kind of his career, that he's been a really good run blocker, that he's been a liability as a pass protector. He's a little bit less of a liability as a pass protector right now. He seems to be a little bit better of a run blocker than he was in the past. I think also the Vikings are putting him in a little bit better of a position. The problem, of course, is that Ed Ingram is now receiving like a majority of the attention that opposing defensive lines are giving the interior, and he is not, hitting the call, right? Like he's not doing what he needs to do. So, I wouldn't say that Garrett Bradbury is like good right now. I'd say that, you know, he's better than we expected him to be. Like you said, that's a pretty low bar, but I think he'll continue to be a liability for the Vikings.
Still not as good as JC Treader, Luke Braun, but it's been all right.
I wonder what J.C. Treader weighs now, like after just a few weeks of not being in NFL conditioning.
You think it's higher or lower?
Low.
Oh, it's probably way lower. Look at Alex Boone.
Yeah, crazy.
One of the things that PFF doesn't adjust for, and they purposefully don't adjust for this, and they have their reasons for it, is degree of difficulty. Like, they won't give more credit for a more difficult job just because working that into their process would probably introduce more noise than it's worth. So it's something we have to like kind of think about. And I think things have been easier for Bradberry this year. He is the same guy he's always been. So my answer to, is he good? Not actionably. We're not extending him, right? Like, that's not, we're still letting him walk. And it's a matter of like, who's picking him up in free agency. That's what he's playing for.
Panthers.
Right. Oh my God. Yeah.
They took Elfline. They took Khalil.
Yeah. But hey, apparently apparently Elfline's not having the worst year. Anyways,
Elfline hasn't been bad so far.
Yeah, it was wild. For Elfline. I digress. Yeah.
He's got his highlights, which is the more point than Bradberry
has. Yeah, Bradberry's job has been easier. They have asked less of him, which to me doesn't mean he's a better player, but it will reflect in a better grade. A big thing in pass pro that I've noticed, as inconsistent as Ed Ingram has been, he's been really good at helping Bradberry. Really good at looking for work, lighting guys up in the middle, and helping Bradberry, especially in like anchor situations, one-on-one. He's not getting bull rushed back because Ed Ingram's just lighting the guy up, and now you don't have to. That is something that he's been really good at, inconsistent elsewhere. But that's just the kind of stuff you miss with like just a PFF grade, because they don't adjust for everything and they don't want to. And I don't even think they're wrong not to adjust for that.
That's a great point by Luke too. And that was going to be my question to you guys. I think we can agree that Ingram, certainly some highlights and some lowlights, inconsistent, what you'd expect from a rookie, but probably overall better than Ole Udo's been from last year. How much of Bradberry's success has to do to play with, you know, now it seems like two really solid guards compared to, again, what he played with last year. You know, I'm assuming that obviously helps quite a bit, right?
It can, but really it speaks more to, I think, what Bron was saying about how you don't really adjust for a degree of difficulty. And in this sense that PFF does like give you a better grade for doing a more difficult job well, but they don't give you a better grade for doing it against somebody like Aaron Donald versus somebody like Sharif Floyd, right? Like it's, maybe that wasn't a great example. Floyd is actually a pretty good player, but you know what I mean, right? Mm-hmm. I think that
Sharif Floyd now.
Right, yeah, Sharif Floyd right now with, you know, his hamstring not firing, yeah. I would think that they do, like, if you're always helping out on a double team and you're pretty good at working with double teams, you'll end up with a pretty good grade, even though it gives you less of a good grade to do so, right? And so if that is one of the adjustments that the team is making, which is not really an accurate assessment of what's actually happening, but like if that's an adjustment the team is making and he's never put in a bad position, they are not they're not doing what like pollsters do to weight demographics and say, hey, we oversampled this demographic, so we'll undersample it in the final thing. That's not what PFF does, right? You have 30 run blocking snaps. Maybe those are less valuable than pass blocking snaps, but they count just as much as the 30 snaps of the entirety of the game. And so it is like, it's a really difficult statistical set of concepts to explain for what PFF does, which is basically saying yes or no to each individual play. But I would say that, like, yeah, I think that it helps, given that they've got a little bit more talent at guard. I think Ezra Cleveland's gotten a little bit better, which is nice to see. I think, you know, obviously Ed Ingram is an upgrade over Ole Udo. Not that that is a very difficult bar to clear. And having those assets available to them allows them to design plays in a way that then minimizes the impact of Bradberry, not to necessarily help Bradberry out. They're not in the business of, you know, making sure his contract is better, but to make sure that there's less interior pressure overall for Kirk Cousins. And so are they accomplishing that goal? Yeah, kind of, I would say so, but it's still a pretty significant problem. And you can't scheme your way out of the fact that two of those three interior offensive linemen are currently a problem, you know, which is not to say Ingram was a bad pick. I think it was for reasons that are unrelated to his play, or that Ingram, you know, won't eventually turn into a good player, but you're not going to be able to scheme your way out of the fact that two of those three guys are liabilities.
I think it's worth mentioning too, that they are asking a lot of Christian Darrisaw, and it's not a problem.
Yes, they're putting him on islands. Awesome.
Like almost as much as anyone in the league is put on islands. Mm-hmm. And that means that the double teams can shift down the line a little bit more. They didn't do that with Riley Reiff. So
yeah,
that
and one way that you can kind of identify this, the Packers would do this with David Bakhtiari. They'll split Darrisaw a couple of inches or maybe even a whole foot wide of the rest of the line. And that really allows them to isolate individual defensive linemen. It makes the job really difficult for the left tackle, but it makes things a lot easier for Cousins, who's a slightly larger pocket as a result of this. Makes it a lot easier for Dalvin Cook or Alexander Mattison, as the case may be. It has a lot of benefits, but it's so hard to do. And so, you know, that's something to take into account as well.
Yeah. So this is the part of the show where Sam pours cold water on the whole conversation. So we all agree that last year's line, bad at pass blocking, right? Mm-hmm. Just like that's the agreement. Sure. So through 3 weeks last year, this is with Rashad Hill, so downgrade that's from right. Christian Darrisaw, yeah. and Ole Udo, which is probably a downgrade from Ingram.
Ole Udo had a good pass protection overall in week one against the Bengals. It was just all the penalties that hurt him.
He was heavily penalized.
Pancake so, JJ Watt once, all right?
Yeah, hey,
so this
crown.
Let me get the stat out. Let me get the stat. I've got a stat. Last year through 3 weeks, Vikings pressure rate allowed 27%. We agree that was a bad offensive line. They ended the year 34%, so it got much worse. So this year's pressure rate through three games, 35%. Higher than
Does
a bad offensive line last year. Say what?
Does that include unblocked? Because there's been a lot of free rushers, a lot of like misset protections. That's something I've been like.
Yeah. So well, it depends. Sam, are you looking at pressure rate as it relates to the quarterback through 3 weeks, or pressure rate as it relates to the offensive line through 3 weeks? Because PFF has different like efficiency percentages for both of those positions.
These are great questions to be asking. Frog in my throat's going to be a problem. That is the quarterback pressure rate. So that could be Smith whiffing. That could be Alexander Mattison whiffing. But I'm just saying that.
It could be Kirk Cousins
through,
failing to adjust the protection to.
Could be on Kirk.
Which it
I'm just
feels
saying
like
that
it's been a problem.
3 weeks, through 3 weeks last year, they were in a pretty good spot as well. So things can change.
This is what I want to say about that. Kirk Cousins is one of the most blitz quarterbacks in the NFL right now. It's not necessarily a product of, you know, Cousins' ability against the blitz, although he's done a very poor job for 3 weeks against the blitz, but rather the people that he's gone up against. Jonathan Gannon blitzed a lot.
Yeah.
For the Eagles, the Detroit Lions just blitz. That's like who they are as an organization. And so he's been blitzed a lot, which means that there's more unblocked rushers, which means that there's going to be more pressure, which is not the fault of the offensive line. So I will say that. I do think the offensive line is better. I also think pressure rate is just a very difficult stat to fully contextualize, right? I think that, you know, I fell into this trap when we were talking about Teddy Bridgewater a lot. You know, he was the most pressured quarterback in the NFL for, I think, two of his 3 years as a starter for a significant period of time. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he just held on to the ball a very long time. And Kirk Cousins does that too, but that's more a product of, you know, heavy play action rates, which we haven't seen actually at all this year. There hasn't been a ton of play action, so we'll see how that changes. But those things all play a role, which don't really tell you how good or how poorly the offensive line is pass protecting. I think the Vikings actually come out all right when you look at ESPN's pass block win rate, which to some extent does control for all of these things that I've been talking about. I don't have it in front of me, and I'm too lazy to look it up right now. But the Vikings look better through 3 weeks in pass block win rate than they did through 3 weeks last year, because I remember last year the pass block win rate was atrocious.
Okay. And this is why Arif is on the show, to poke holes in my negativity. So, and people say Arif's the negative one.
Optimistic.
Look at that argument he just spun. Unreal. Hey, betonline.net continues to be your source for football betting info this season. NCAA football lines, NFL football lines. Vikings favored by 2.5 in London. It's moving around between 3 and 2.5. I would get it at 2.5. So then you win when the Vikings win by a field goal. As always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all sports wagering info. And you've got MMA, boxing, and golf as well. Plus, last week, the MLB season. See if the Twins, you can get some juicy Twins lines and get in on the action before their season's over. Head to betonline.net on your mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. And hey, make sure to subscribe to Locked On Sports Minnesota as well on YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. It's free and available, or on the Amazon Fire Roku apps. A conversation I want to have about Justin Jefferson. He has been more or less shut down 2 weeks in a row. Where do you give the fault in that? JJ? Kirk Cousins? Kevin O'Connell? Other factors? Where do you assign, I guess, the percentage of blame? Luke Inman, start with you.
Yeah, I feel like the last 2 weeks, it's not one guy or one thing. Kirk, just in general, maybe a little bit more panicky in the pocket, maybe not seeing the field as well as we're used to. He's not pulling the trigger when guys are there. I think that'll get better with time, learning this new offense. Darius Slay had maybe, I don't know, the game of his life week two. Got to give a little credit there. Obviously, defenses are just going to key in on JJ and say, we're not going to let Jefferson beat us. And until they can put a bunch of chunk plays on tape to Thielen or KJ or Irv Smith, whoever it may be, and force defenses to go back and watch the tape and scheme against that as well, I think you'll see the same bracket and double coverage. It's, you know, on KOC and Kirk to get the ball to those open guys in those situations. I think, honestly, though, out of all the different factors and variables, I think, for me, KOC and the play calling specifically should be near the bottom of the list, in my opinion.
I'm going to take the opposite track here. I think that KOC is a lot at blame, but I think primarily it shouldn't really be a question of, you know, whose fault is it that Justin Jefferson is shut down, if it's not Jefferson's fault. I don't think it is, right? And if it's the case that he's getting shut down and then it's not his fault, you know, what should the team's response be? And it should be to distribute the ball to the other passer or the other receivers, because that's, you know, how you win games, right? Because the goal is not to get Justin Jefferson 150 yards, it's to win the game. And as Luke Braun so eloquently tweeted, you know, the Lions gave up the game in order to stop Justin Jefferson. That should be the goal of the Vikings, that when you shut down Justin Jefferson, you start distributing the ball elsewhere. Now, I think a lot of that's on Kirk Cousins, right? You know, he should be able to throw the ball elsewhere. That'll rotate coverages and stuff like that. But I think in terms of making sure that Justin Jefferson continues to be an impact or a factor in the game, a lot of that does have to do with KOC. I think that, you know, his goal in the Lions game was to try and free up coverage for Jefferson by sliding Thielen across. He was moving Thielen around a lot and to try and peel, you know, various cornerbacks off of Jefferson. And that just wasn't working because they kept on adjusting to reorient themselves towards Jefferson. When you distribute the ball more to players like Thielen, players more like KJ Osborne, you know, that's going to open up. You're going to be able to get back to Jefferson. And so that's a little bit on Kirk. But I think that in terms of hiding Jefferson or protecting him or finding ways to give him the ball, I think a lot of that does fall on play design and KOC. But again, they don't care if Justin Jefferson is shut down. They care about winning the game. The goal should be that for every yard you lose from Jefferson getting shut down, you should get a yard and a half elsewhere. So if Jefferson was going to have a 150-yard game, you should be able to get, you know, 175, 200, 250 yards from, you know, the combination of Irv Smith, Thielen, and Osborne that wouldn't have been there if Jefferson wasn't shut down. It kind of reminds me of when Seattle triple teams Stephon Diggs and double team Adam Thielen on the same play, and Kirk Cousins had nothing to do because the Vikings were only running two receivers and routes on that play. You know, just like figure it out and put more receivers into pass patterns, and then Cousins has to, you know, take it upon him to actually read the progression and go through with it.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. Unless you can't find Thielen and Osborne, then it becomes a bad thing. But that's the bad thing. Both the Eagles and the Lions sold out. Like, they put everything. They put both their safeties, get safety over the top on one side, a safety looking to poach anything that comes across the field on the other side, a corner playing underneath. In the Eagles game, there was some man-to-man where Justin Jefferson just, like, lost the route to Darius Slay. Like, fair enough. But, like, in this last game, at least against the Lions, saying like whose fault it is implies that it was a bad thing. But if you just let the Lions sell out to stop Justin Jefferson and then they lose the game to KJ Osborne at the end of it, okay, like what are you changing there? That's, I think, one of the primary reasons the Vikings won that game and were able to make both of those comebacks is because Adam Thielen was one-on-one on like every third down major clutch situation. And he was able to either beat Mario Horoye or Amani
or draw Horoye. The penalty.
Or draw a penalty.
Come on, it's not hard.
Horoye. I'm struggling. it's not. But like, yeah, it was that easy for Thielen to get open, that's kind of what it starts coming down to, is the other players. If you can find the other players, if anything, this could be a good thing. This could favor us, and other teams may not want to keep doing that if they don't feel like they have players that can cover Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne one-on-one, which the Lions did not. If you can't win one-on-one with Thielen and Osborne, or if Cousins can't find those guys, then everything falls apart. But then you're blaming someone for that.
Yeah, I think it started looking how it should look in those last two touchdown drives, where it took until then to get Thielen and Osborne involved. And that pivot does need to happen faster. Now, to prepare for this, I went and looked at other receivers that we often associate with the best in football to see how often they get, quote-unquote, shut down. Now, my arbitrary benchmark for being shut down is less than 5 catches and less than 50 yards. Do we agree that that's a good benchmark? You have to agree because that's the research I did. All right. So,
I'm here to validate your research.
Thank you, Arif. Thank you. Since 2020, when Justin Jefferson came into the league, he has been shut down 5 times. Okay? 5th being against Detroit. Cooper Kupp, last 2 years, including, you know, this year as well. So 2020, same time frame. He's been shut down 4 times. So really not that dissimilar. Jamar Chase last year, 5 times. And that's only 1 year. Devontae Adams is a unicorn. He's only been shut down 3 times going back to 2019. Tyreek Hill last year, 4 times. And then again this year, once in 2020. So 6 total. So more than Justin Jefferson. So the point being, I don't know if there's any reason to be concerned. Guys get shut down. It happens. No. And he is being shut down less than some of the elite receivers in football.
It ebbs and flows. You put up 180 yards in one game, the next team is going to do some stuff about that. And then you go a couple of quiet games, and then the next team might not do as much stuff about that. Maybe the Saints won't quite sell out as much as the Lions did here in this London game. And then he'll be able to put up over 100 yards again. It's just kind of how the game goes.
But he was on a 3,000-yard pace. Now we don't have that.
This is very sad. Yes.
Do we have the new pace? What are we at now?
I don't know. He had, what, like 60 yards combined over these past 2 games? So, you know, do that math.
So 250 times 5. I'm literally just not going to. Like 1,300, 1,400?
A tragedy.
Those are rookie numbers.
Ugh,
those are rookie
it?
Numbers.
Ugh. Quite literally his those, rookie numbers.
Get those numbers up. nerdy stat of the day. I've got one if you guys want to scramble to find yours. So 40 games all time internationally. Home teams, which means nothing, but that's why it's a nerdy stat. Home teams all time internationally. 16-23-1. Of course, Kirk Cousins was involved in the one. But it bodes well for the Vikings. The visitors are clearly at an advantage when traveling overseas.
1394, meaningful. By the way, which is exactly his over-under.
Amazing.
Are you kidding me?
1394.
On the nose. On the nose.
He's on pace.
Whoa. Mm. Vegas is good. Nerdy stats?
And what about the Saints?
Go for it.
Great. Thank you.
I lost it, so I had to pick it back up. Okay, so in the Carolina game, which was an offensive catastrophe, their offense is like broken. In Carolina, they had, this comes from NOLA Analytics, a Twitter account. They had 5 pass plays on first down in the first 3 quarters that turned into negative EPA, so unsuccessful first down pass plays. Every single time they ran the ball, and that set up 4 third and sixes and a 3rd and 11. On those 5 plays alone, they suffered minus 2.3 EPA. They seem to be a team that gets spooked when first down goes poorly and wants to run it in a similar vein to Mike Zimmer. Defensive head coaches. Clearly, that's the thing that's happening here.
Take that, Dennis Allen. Okay, yeah. I'll choose one that, like, clearly I didn't prepare for the segment, but, you know, we'll suit the purposes of my narratives anyway. 47.7, that's Kirk Cousins' passer rating when blitzed. It's the worst passer rating he's ever had when blitzed. He's normally much better against the blitz than he has been this year, and he's also been one of the more blitzed quarterbacks in the NFL. That is very similar to the passer rating that we see from much maligned quarterback, and fairly so, Justin Fields, whose passer rating is 37 under the blitz. Now, there are some good quarterbacks who have a poor passer rating under blitz. That's Jalen Hurts and Justin Herbert. Now, sometimes that is a product of the weird formula the passer rating uses. It does not respect a high yards per attempt when you have a low completion rate. It overweights interceptions. It doesn't account for when a player drops a pass that gets turned into an interception. And so you can take a look at, say, PFF grade and see if maybe that looks a little bit better or worse under the blitz. And oh my God, Kirk Cousins ranks 31st in that as well. So for some reason this year, he is doing a very poor job against the blitz. That might have something to do with his level of preparation. It might have something to do with the timing within the offense. It might have something to do with what Kevin O'Connell is doing, giving him, you know, in terms of those tools. But that's something that needs to be corrected, because he's going to continue to be blitzed time and time until he figures that out. Because the book on Kirk Cousins has always been, fairly or not, and the numbers didn't really support this to the degree that people thought, that he will fold under pressure, right? That has been the book on him. It's not necessarily accurate in the same way that people think, but this year it has been the case, and I think that teams are going to jump at that opportunity.
Wow. Powerful. Powerful stuff. Dang. You don't have found this one from Jason Fitzgerald over at overthecap.com. Vikings ranked just 31st in the league in salary cap, tied into their IR, which is 3.7 mil sitting on injured reserve. Only big names, I guess. BC Johnson, Kenny Willekes, Ryan Conley, all things considering pretty great compared to the league average, which is about 17, 18 mil. Titans lead the league with 47 mil. They just put Taylor Lewan on the IR. They got Harold Landry hurt. Lions are second worst in the league. They just put Tracy Walker now on the IR. Two of their top three rookies, Jameson Williams, Josh Pascal's on the IR. Packers are right behind the Vikes at 30th. So even though they've been banged up early, they're sitting pretty when it comes to season-long injuries. Bears are 19th with 13.9 mil. But, you know, all in all, 3 weeks into the season, no major long-term injuries when it comes to, you know, big names and starters for the Vikes. Remember, one of the first things Kwesi and KOC did was bring Rams executive director, player health, personnel, and performance, Tyler Williams, who had a really good track record. I mean, almost a phenomenal track record, keeping his teams healthy. So far, so good if you're a Vikes fan on the injury department. Obviously, you got to knock on wood after that one.
Tyler Williams really put it on the line yesterday, saying how the Vikings sleep plan is going to help them win on Sunday, and the sleep number beds are going to be in. They better be ready. I mean, they're putting the sleep number partnership at risk right now, because the Saints have been comfy there for a few days. But digressing to injuries, and, you know, because Luke mentioned it, I think we should talk about the injuries in this game. Za'Darius Smith, DNP yesterday, C.J. Ham, DNP, Dalvin Cook, DNP, and also Andrew Booth. Shouldn't he have been on the IR if he's going to miss 3 weeks? Like, I wonder if this is the first example of Andrew Booth. But he was hurt in week one. So it would have made sense to put him on the IR after week one, miss three games, and then come back. So yeah, it makes
what
me
I'm
wonder,
saying is that the IR return rule reverted back to 4 weeks from 3 weeks.
It did.
So see, they Mikey must have thought that an example he had a of chance. It yeah.
So they must have thought he had a chance to play this one, then it's not worth it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Which it seems like it is. Concerns about the Vikings injury situation.
In terms of, like, you know, Za'Darius Smith, it, you know, my understanding is that he'll be full go and ready to play. And that is the injury that, you know, catches my ear the most when you list them off. And so that's the only one, right? They don't have a bunch of depth there, but we haven't seen Andrew Booth play for a while. We haven't seen, you know, some of these players, you know, make a big impact for the Vikings. So I'm not, like, that concerned. Plus, if you take a look at the Saints injury report, it's a battlefield, man. That looks way worse. Right. Imagine, you know, Jameis Winston's not ready. Michael Thomas seemed, you know, wasn't participating. Jarvis Landry was on the injury report. Like, that is Ryan Ramczyk. I don't think participated.
Two of their top five tackles or linemen. Yeah. Yeah. Ramczyk and Andres Pete.
Yeah. Like, it's brutal what's going on with the Saints injury report. The Vikings one seems pretty mild in comparison.
If Za'Darius Smith is full go, then that's probably the biggest concern. And then the other thing is just what's up with Dalvin Cook's shoulder, because a lot of the big plays the Saints have given up in these first three games have been sort of after the catch or after a run, like second level pursuing, failing in the open field. And Dalvin Cook is really good at setting that kind of thing up. So I would love to see Dalvin Cook play in this game. But yeah, if the shoulder's not right, it's not right. One to watch, but definitely watching the Za'Darius Smith thing closer, I'd be happy to see him go.
Yep, yep. Hard not to say Cook, because obviously he's electric. He's a game changer, but I think a lot of people got a lot of confidence in Madison right now. So I'm with you guys. I'll say Za'Darius getting that pass rush going against whichever quarterback plays here, whether it's Jameis or Andy Dalton, probably some Taysom Hill packages in there, is going to be vital, obviously, for this defense success. Although I will say, I think a lot of people are just chomping at the bit here to see Andrew Booth Jr. out there in this secondary. They need just kind of a shot of just some youth, some fresh legs, some rejuvenation, I know could help that back end.
So of the healthy Saints, or the unhealthy Saints, we don't know who's going to play or not, who would you remove from the Saints to benefit the Vikings if you could? I'm not saying they're going to have a terrible injury. Just like in a mythical world, remove them from the Saints equation. Who would you choose? Who would you pick
Taysom
out
Hill.
Of that team? Taysom, who gave them fits. I still remember the playoff game. Taysom Hill that running roughshod on that defense, and you were actually thankful when Drew Brees was under center. It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, quarterback, I 99% of the time, I think, is the answer here. But Jameis has played so bad as of late. Clearly not the same with that back injury. So maybe you do hope he does start Sunday. Honestly, I'll go with Marshawn Lattimore. One of maybe a handful of cornerbacks in the league you could call probably a shutdown kind of guy. He's been so good the last few years. When they played the Bucs in week two and he got ejected, it completely changed the game defensively for the Saints. If they're able to match up with J.J. one-on-one, we talk about all this extra attention defenses are giving J.J. and not give all that attention this Sunday because of Lattimore, it could make things pretty difficult for Kirk and KOC. So Lattimore would be my choice. Linebacker DeMario Davis would probably be in the mix too.
Yeah, I think I wholeheartedly agree with Inman here. Lattimore is absolutely my choice. As soon as I saw that on the segment schedule, that was the name that came into my head immediately, given how well he's been playing, this year. Also, obviously, like Luke said, you would think about the quarterback situation, but the backup quarterback for the Saints is not Taysom Hill. It's Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton obviously has eviscerated the Vikings recently. And we also know that the Vikings are bad against backup quarterbacks for some reason. New coach, new regime, maybe that's not the case. But, if the Vikings are going to lose, I'd much rather they lose to Jameis Winston than Andy Dalton, because the Saints have determined that Winston's a better quarterback. Now, I know there has been a lot of chatter in the Saints fandom that Andy Dalton should replace Winston. That's how poorly Winston's been playing. I think that for the most part, yeah, I mean, it would be slightly better for them if Jameis Winston were to play, but I think Lattimore's going to have the biggest impact on the game. And I know that Vikings fans who have not been following the Saints this year will be shouting, at the screens if you're watching on YouTube, or shouting into the podcast, Alvin Kamara, right? Because of, all that he's done to the Vikings. But he is having a really bad year this year. I think that's a combination of how that offense is being designed and also how bad that offensive line is playing.
So you're saying the 2017 running back draft class is starting to wear down. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, that's wild.
What about the guy who's going to help Mike Thomas tremendously, assuming that Michael Thomas is helping him play? Chris Olave.
That's a good one. Yeah,
Chris Olave, who leads rookies in receiving yards, average depth of target,
19.3,
239 yards per route run. He's having a great start to the season, only three games, but he's dangerous. And if he and Thomas are both threats out there, I worry about this porous Vikings secondary. That's an issue for me.
Yeah, right. Ramchek, obviously a Pro Bowl right tackle, but Danielle Hunter's actually had pretty good success against him in the past. But, having your two starting wide receivers on the injury report didn't practice, and then your two starting offensive linemen on the injury report, plus your starting quarterback. Yeah, Arif mentioned it. I mean, the Saints are in serious trouble right now, just from an injury and health standpoint.
We've got Ron Johnson coming up momentarily, our guest today. He joins us every Thursday. Before he does, make sure to subscribe on YouTube here. Leave a comment down below. Which Saint scares you the most in Sunday's game. Give us a final score prediction. Like, subscribe, comment on YouTube, Locked On Sports Minnesota for this show, Superior Sports Talk, Ron Johnson, the postcast, all of our programming. Let me get a conversation going as Ron Johnson joins and he can jump in. A little old guy update. I think a big talking point going into the season was, how are the vets going to hold up? New scheme, Harrison Smith, Patrick Peterson, even Eric Hendricks is getting up there in years. How do you feel like they have fared? Because I feel like this defense succeeding is dependent on some of those guys playing to their full potential or close to it. Luke Braun, your thoughts on that?
I feel like to really answer this in like the old guy from the old guy angle, I have to ignore coverage busts a little bit. Changes the answer a lot because I think miscommunications have been all over this defense. Nobody is free of sin. Patrick Peterson's been burned down the sideline more often than he was last year. I think this is definitely the last year for him. Eric Kendricks, he's busted a lot of coverages, but he's also made a lot of plays. And some of those coverage busts, it's hard to know if that actually is his fault or if it's a younger player's fault. So that's also kind of why, like, maybe set that aside, you know, different topic. Mm-hmm. Harrison Smith is a very central piece of that defense. They're doing a lot of things to make him like a weak side quarter safety, which in a lot of the defensive coverages means he's the guy roaming. He'll be the guy that's either assigned to cover a running back, and then if that running back isn't running a route, poach something. Look at the quarterback's eyes. Go make a play. Go be Harrison Smith.
It's what a Troy Polamalu kind of did roving in around defense when they were running quarters.
Yeah. And it's not unlike the job Harrison Smith has had in Zimmer defenses, yeah, too. I don't have really a problem with Harrison Smith. I have a specific problem with Eric Kendricks that might be understandable or might not even be his fault. And Patrick Peterson's been burned one too many times for my liking, but I don't think catastrophic.
There's the doorbell. It's Ron Johnson joining us, his Thursday appearance at 3RonJohnson on Twitter. You can hear the Ron Johnson show with Ron and I, or is it Ron and me? With Ron and me, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, roundtable on Friday. Ron, have you ever been to London?
I've not been to London. Can't say I have.
Okay. I told myself that if the Vikings are back there in the next 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, I'm going to make a point of going because it sounds cool. It looks cool. Arif is there, and Luke Braun is headed out there. But we'll be watching back here in the States, Ron. We were just talking about the quote-unquote old guys on the Vikings defense, the Harrison Smiths, Eric Kendricks, Patrick Peterson, and how they're holding up in this new scheme. What are your thoughts on those key Vikings veterans so far?
Honestly, I we don't know what the call is, so it's tough to always say this guy's wrong, this guy's right. I mean, Patrick Peterson called out PFF in his press conference saying, you know, these guys keep giving us certain grades and they have no idea what coverage we're in. They have no idea who actually made the mistake and who was trying to cover for somebody else's mistake. That's why it's a team sport. Football's a team sport, especially on defense. Sometimes guys do things to help out another guy, not realizing they put themselves in a bad position and ends up looking bad. But in my opinion, I think, you know, week three, they're learning every week. They're getting better every week. Sometimes it takes time to gel. But you heard Ed Donatelle talk about it. You heard Mike Pettine talk about it. That, you know, they're going to start to do more and more things with Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith. It's just taking time to unveil, I guess, all of it. But, you know, slowly but surely, you're going to see more and more. But I think Patrick Peterson, he's doing, for the most part, his job. A lot of times, I feel like there's miscommunications versus just a guy blowing the coverage. And not understanding who's supposed to be on the deep third or who's supposed to be in press man. I thought I had safety help, and I don't have safety help. So I think some of those conversations are going to get better as the season goes on, because Harrison Smith talked about it last year, and I think every year, hey, when we're not communicating, or Mike Zimmer wants us to communicate more because we're making too many mistakes. So I think that's the big issue right now.
Luke, what do you got?
Yeah, Ron, a lot of discussion about the difference between the Saints and the Vikings traveling plans this week. Saints bolted for London Monday morning. Vikes aren't leaving until today after practice. And I get it. Like, the theory is the longer you're out there, the more fires you have to potentially put out. But as a former player, which game plan would you prefer just from a logistic standpoint? And I guess just overall, too, with these London games, what are the repercussions these teams have to deal with all the travel? Because remember, the Vikes asked the schedule makers not to have their bye week coming back from London, which is what most teams get because it's so early in the season. So prepping for the Bears next week seems like a tough ripple effect too. What are your thoughts on the whole London game?
Well, they're going to get 9 hours on a plane to game plan the Bears as soon as the Saints game ends. So I think that's going to be part of the prep. A lot of the coaches are going to have to stay awake and get their prep out the way, because I'm guessing they're going to want to sleep a little bit on Monday before they get back in the office. My guess is Monday afternoon, Monday night. So they can sleep during the day to kind of catch back up. But they have a sleep doctor or something. I know they have a commercial now with Sleep Number, and they have a sleep doctor kind of explaining to them the benefits and what they should do. So I know this is not just, you know, flying by the seat of their pants. I think at the end of the day, technology is so different now. Guys are so much better at taking care of their bodies now. So I'm pretty sure they're going to do exactly what they need to do to get ready to go for a Sunday game. I mean, you have Thursday to get on the plane, relax, rest. You'll have most of the day Friday to kind of rest, get a run through, get your body going again. You'll have a Saturday walkthrough and rest, and then you'll play Sunday. So honestly, I think they'll be fine. That's the Saints wanting to get over there and do more stuff. But yeah, I mean, you do open yourself up to issues of guys being out of the country, overseas, wanting to do some stuff, have some fun. You never know what might come up. So I definitely understand trying to stay out of the headlines.
I was wondering, so the Saints need to get right game. Their offense is in a terrible way. They've been making all kinds of mistakes. The points scored is abysmal. They need to have like a get right kind of day. And I was wondering, in your experience, what goes into that? Have you ever just been like, man, we're slumping, we need a game, and had that kind of that moment where it all starts clicking? What goes into that? What do you need to be looking for?
Yeah, honestly, I think coaches point that out more so than players sometimes, just like pointing out where the issues are. So it could be and there could be small things like, hey, the center and guard, you guys aren't doing a great job of talking. We see it all the time when we see highlights of like these two guys went and blocked the same guy. A guy came scot-free. Nobody blocked him. So that comes up all the time. So it could be the offensive line. It could be as simple as, hey, Jameis, you're not seeing the checks. You have to understand the fire blitz, or you have to understand when this guy's in this gap, we cannot run the ball this way. My guess is there's going to be some mental things that he's doing. As far as the interceptions goes, he's headed for another historic year if he continues at this pace. 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And the biggest key to that was, I think the Bucs confused him, and they know him. And so familiarity is a huge benefit sometimes in the NFL. When you know a player, especially a quarterback, and this defense has gone against them, you know the things that confuse them the most. And so you can kind of show him some looks to make him think otherwise, and then he's going to give you some balls. And the Bucs said it. They said, hey, he's going to give us some balls. So I don't know how many teams are as familiar as Jameis Winston as the Bucs are. So that might have been lightning in a bottle for the Bucs, and maybe, you know, the Saints aren't going to see that anymore. But, you know, fighting injury as well, that's going to be a key. If you can get him scared and off his spot and nervous about taking a hit or getting thrown to the ground, he's going to want to get rid of the ball soon. Like, kind of like Eli Manning back when he came to US Bank Stadium years ago, where they said, Eli's not going to take a sack, and he's also not going to throw an interception. And Eli grounded the ball probably 5 to 6 times the minute somebody was coming, and he knew he had no other option. He's not going to, you know, and I think Jameis, you can get him a little spooked as well. But I don't know if he's the guy that's going to ground the ball. I think he's a guy that's going to, you know, if he's getting pressured and he doesn't want to get hit, he's going to make a mistake. And so it's good to have Harrison Smith back, because I think they can benefit from some of those deep balls he just throws up, hoping somebody makes the catch.
My question does relate back to travel. I assume that, you know, kind of the longest you've traveled is probably an East Coast to West Coast trip or something like that. When you travel that much, when it's like 4 time zones, which obviously, you know, this is, you know, 6, I think. When you travel that much, how do you make sure, because your body is going to be right to play at a certain period of time and it's not going to be right, how do you make sure that your body is ready to go when it needs to be? Because the Vikings are going to be playing, I think, like 8:30 Central Time, 8:30 a.m., which is just not very usual. How do you make sure that your body is like in a good spot where it's ready to play football at, you know, full speed?
Yeah, no, for sports, I've never had to travel that far. I did go to Beijing, though, back in 2008 for the Olympics with my wife when she was in the Olympics, and Lindsay Whalen was over there. And I think for them, it was honestly, it was like 2 to 3 days before their bodies caught back up to get ready to compete. Again, I go back to this sleep number thing, the sleep doctor they've, you know, bought in. I know PJ Fleck has a sleep therapist as well, and they talk about music levels when you're on the plane and how much, you know, sleep. If you're not going to get a full, you know, whatever, I think it's 6 to 7 or 8 hours, you don't want to take more than it's like an hour or 90 minute nap. So there's all these weird things to keep your body from getting groggy. My guess is Kevin O'Connell being new age, he's looked into all that stuff for the players and made sure the sleep numbers, preparing these guys with pillows for the plane, you know, the weighted blankets, whatever they need to figure out, hey, are you going to sleep through this night, or what are you going to do? They're getting all that prepared so that when they land, their bodies are ready to go. I mean, I've seen the Gophers do things getting off the plane for like a simple 3-hour flight to get the guys' bodies right for the next day's game. So there's all kinds of things that these therapists now have looked into and researched. Whether it works or not, we'll see. But yeah, I think honestly, at the end of the day, you have to trust the therapist. They get paid to do this. They research it for a living. And the Vikings clearly have found somebody to do it for them.
Ron, I know you got to get in and out. You can hear Ron's breakdown of this game in more detail tomorrow on the roundtable with Reggie Wilson, Luke Inman, and myself. We'll also talk Gophers Purdue. And Ron, I think we're a couple weeks away from needing to break down whether the Gophers can slow down Bryce Young in the college football playoff.
They got to slow down CJ Stroud first.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Yep, quarterback gauntlet right there. At 3 Ron Johnson on Twitter. Thanks a lot for joining us, Ron.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Every Thursday, Ron Johnson joins the Minnesota Football Party.
How about
fun question? That, how about them Gophers? Sky-U-Ma. Sky-U-Ma. One fun question, and then we get into our gambling for the week. Bucks-Chiefs looking like it might stay in Tampa Bay. I think it's staying in Tampa Bay. If it had been played at U.S. Bank Stadium, would you attend? And whose jersey would you be repping in that game?
Jerick McKinnon. There is a correct answer. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's got to be Jet.
That's the correct answer.
Numero uno.
Got to be Jet.
Home jersey, all red, yes. Number one, Jerick McKinnon.
Yeah, I think I would take Mahomes. I'm sorry, guys.
You're going chalk. All right, fair enough.
Take, yeah, go chalk. Nothing wrong with that.
No Bucks backers in this group. No one's wearing a Winfield.
The Winfield actually was on my mind. It was going to be my number two, yeah. But that's a pretty good one. Yeah.
Yeah, but you they know, as Tyler Vikings Johnson fans, dirty, it's like though. Your second favorite team is right. Not allowed to be in the NFC. So I think those are the rules. You got to pick a AFC team to root for after the Vikes. So I think that's why we all kind of lean Chiefs. But yeah, if I was going Bucks, so yeah, I think I would rock the Winfield for sure.
Have to.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where we're at with our gambling contest. If you're new to the contest, $1,000 mythical dollars to begin the season. We make one bet against the spread and one over under. You can bet maximum this week, $400, minimum $40. Here's where it stands. We've all lost money. Luke Inman, you've lost the least money. You are 3-3 after 3 weeks. Your bankroll is at 916. Luke Braun, you were 0-1-1 last week. Your bankroll is at 863 and change. I was 1-1 last week. I'm at 810. And Arif Hassan. Oh,
hey,
oh goodness.
Let's go.
1-5. 1-5 total. Bankroll 414. So
look at that.
This is the situation we're in. We need to come up with a punishment for the loser of this contest at year's end. We need to get that soon. We also need a punishment if you have to go into the negative dollars, because Arif is closing in on that number and maybe even going into it this week. We'll see if he gets conservative on us. Luke Inman, you are the starter this week, and you've kind of been going with your over-under first and then doing the spread second. What is your strategy going to be this
track?
Week?
Yeah, what? I didn't even know that. Yeah. Is that a thing?
That is a thing.
Betting analytics, by the way, here, but not for... Yeah. Making better bets just for tracking
still
the draft.
I still think I got robbed.
Over-unders.
I thought, I thought that Vikings over-under was 51.5 when I locked it up last week, but apparently you're telling me otherwise. But all right, that's fine. I got an idea, by the way, for the Arif punishment. If he goes in the red, if he goes in negative dollars, I think he should have to sit down, somebody, a significant other, family member, whoever it may be, and have a conversation and videotape it and pretend like this is real money and sit him down and have a serious conversation like, guys, I got a gambling problem. I've lost $688 already this year. I got a problem. You got to record it and you got to send it to us. You got to post it. That's my idea I'm throwing out there anyways. We still got to think of a good loser punishment though. All right. Well, you know, I'm getting called out for going over under first. So now I'm feeling self-conscious about it. I will go with my spread line first. I'm going to take the Jags +6.5. Something about Trevor Lawrence and Jags, Doug Peterson this year. Maybe the Eagles are due for just a little bit of a regression here. Jags +6.5. That's at -110. I believe I'm going to go $200. I'm going to stay consistent and go $200 bet again.
All right. Arif.
I locked in – I didn't say I locked in. I chose my bet this morning. It was going to be on the Chiefs-Buccaneers game, but I'm betting that the line has changed now that we've got potentially updated news on the venue being back in Tampa Bay. So I'm double-checking that real quick to see if that's changed.
Pick 'em.
It's a pick 'em now. Okay, great. Yeah. And it's at -110 pick 'em?
-108. Okay.
That's great because I was going to buy the Chiefs at -1. Now I can buy them at pick 'em. That's fine. I think when you're losing, you have to be aggressive, right? So I'm gonna throw in. My max is 400. Let's throw in 400.
Woo! Let's go.
He is risking it all, baby.
You have to, right? My goal is not to not be last. My goal is to win.
All right, yeah.
Well, we're going to have to come up with that punishment then, ASAP. Luke Braun.
I actually did make a bet earlier in the week, and I got in on the Dolphins with more points. Tua Tagovailoa might not play. If he does, his record against the spread as an underdog is unreal. And if he doesn't play, it's Teddy Spreadwater. And the line not appear to know which quarterback is playing. They are currently underdogs by 3.5 points at Cincinnati. Of course, Cincinnati's been kind of struggling. They just beat the Jets, but who doesn't? So I'm taking Miami Dolphins +3.5, -115. And I'll stick with
$100. Sorry, I cut you off. What was the number?
-115, and I'm putting 100 on it.
All right. So my question about Teddy Spreadwater, is that a Mike Zimmer stat or a Teddy Bridgewater stat? Has it followed him?
It is a Teddy Bridgewater stat.
Good question.
It has maybe even gotten better after the Vikings. It is very much
the first year with Sean Payton was insane. Wasn't he covering virtually
every
week?
5-0 in that when Drew Brees got the same injury or Smith has.
And do you, off the top of your head, do you know his record against the spread? Is in like 60-70%, something
like
that? Off
the top of my head, but it's like, it's like 67%. I don't know the exact numbers, but it's insane.
The 2015 Vikings set him up for a long time to have an above average spread record. So Arif stole the Chiefs from me. Luke, by the way, more gambling analytics. I think you've ridden the Jaguars 3 different weeks, if not every week.
Hey.
Well,
that's wild. So I've been on the Ravens train along with Arif. We've both been battling over the Ravens, but I'm going to back off that because it is the Bills. And I don't
Same thought process.
Yeah. I mean, home dogs though for Baltimore. No, I like the Bills a lot. So I'm going to go with the team that doesn't have a win because I just think Russell Wilson's bad right now and the Broncos seem all out of sorts. So I'm going to go with the home favorite Raiders -2.5 and -115 for $112. And I get to pick twice on the wraparound. Do I want to just put it on the Vikings just so it's more fun to watch? Over under 43. Vikings offense has been slumpy. The Saints have also been bad. I'm going to go under 43 in London. Vikings and Saints.
I can't stand any of, like, I hate all of these over-unders.
Sorry, yeah, 100
really well said. I hate them.
I'm going to go $99 on that.
What? Okay.
Weird numbers. I hate that we're so attached to round numbers in this society. I'm trying to buck the trend. I'm an agitator.
You know what? Fair enough. It's just like all of these, there's so many bad offenses in the league. I feel like I just want to take two teams with crappy offenses and take their under, even if it's a low number. So I'll go like Bears Giants under 39.5 and just assume that game is going to end like 13-16. But I hate all of these and I don't feel very confident in them. So I'm only going to put 50 on it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, Bears Giants was on my list of potential over unders to take, and I was going to take the under there too, but luckily they were my second choice. My first choice was the under on Seahawks Lions. That Lions offense is really fun to watch, but it just does not seem sustainable to me. And Geno Smith is playing like a dink and dunk game manager. It feels like there's a lot of opportunities to not have a ton of points. Plus, the Lions can easily kind of snowball themselves out of points. When they go for it on fourth down a ton, maybe they're not going to be as successful on fourth down. So there's going to be a lot of points potentially left on the board. So I'm going to take the under there. It's -110, the dollar value. I need to be aggressive. I'm not as confident about this one, but I need to be aggressive. So I'm going to do $300.
700 bones on the table, wow. Baby. I like it. Hey, you can get it all back. No matter what's happened up to this point, you can get it all back this week.
That is the responsible way to gamble. Lucan.
I don't know who it was. I think it was maybe Warren Sharp tweeted out. Somebody tweeted out that the unders through 3 weeks have hit more this year than they have in like the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah, offense is down.
Come around.
Should come around. Of course, I'm not going to listen to that logic. I'm going against the grain. The Ravens Bills have the highest over under of the week at 51. I'm going to hit the over for 200 bones. And that is at...
That was my third choice. I was going to take the under.
Ooh.
All right.
That's wild.
Luke, Jags, Ravens, Bills, Arif, Chiefs, Seahawks, Lions, Braun, Dolphins, and Bears, Giants, Sam, Raiders, and Vikings, Saints. I feel horrible about mine. All right. Those are the picks this week. We will report back on Monday, and we will end this show with some party fouls and some animation leading into it.
I'm gonna get the easy one out of the way. Frankie Lasagna just missed catching that Aaron Judge home run ball number 61, tying Roger Maris's record. If you haven't seen it, you got to go watch it. But had the glove, had the location, tracked the ball, just missed it. Me personally, I don't know how far that drop was, how big that wall is, 10, 12, 15 feet. I'm making that jump and I'm going for it.
It's a couple million.
I'm a moron. Who's Frankie Lasagna?
He's the guy who dropped the Aaron Judge home run ball in Toronto last night.
No, I know that, but what is the name? Is that like something we call people that drop home runs? That's his real name.
That's his real name. He owns an Italian restaurant.
Yeah, that's all 100% true.
So this is a famous person.
No, well, he's doing great.
No. Well, he's famous now.
He's famous now.
They just figured out what his name was.
I think that's a joke, guys. Seriously. That's a joke. That's a guy, barstool personality. And I think they just said that. So
are we still on this?
No way. I saw check marks.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what I've been dragged into here. I saw the guy miss the ball. I don't know if so. He's not an actually famous person. What are the odds of that?
He's not like famous, but after he dropped the ball, obviously some people started to try to dig up. All right, who was this guy? This is going to be a bit. This is going to be a story. Who are you? What's your background? What's your name? Apparently, his name's Frankie Lasagna, and he owns an Italian restaurant.
This is reported in actual newspapers. His name is Frankie Lasagna. So it's a Blue Jays fan. So it's a Canadian newspaper. Blue Jays fan Frank Lasagna grabbed a baseball glove from his garage before heading down to Rogers. They interviewed the guy. This is his real name.
Is this real, like Dan Campbell's drunk quotes are real? Because that was also dragged into question.
Yeah, so it turns out that was real. But like, Dan Campbell said the thing, and he didn't mean it. So it turns out, actually, that was real. So sorry, Sam. But also, they interviewed the guy, and he said his name is Frankie Lasagna. The original information comes from a Canadian reporter.
Okay, so let me just summarize the last 2 minutes of absolute chaos. A man dropped the ball. I saw this. He brought his glove. He dropped the ball. He lost out on probably a lot of money. That sucks for him. We didn't know the name until after the fact. He had no fame before the moment, and now he has fame.
That is all correct.
Because he's
just
got
like
a crazy name.
Cubs.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Luke Braun or Arif. We're off the rails.
Go ahead, Arif.
Luke's still looking for his. No, I'm gonna dip back into an old well. I'm gonna pick Brett Favre again. This time, illegally funneling charity money as opposed to state money. Which is what he was doing before, back into that University of Southern Mississippi athletic facility, the volleyball athletic facility, which includes funding for the locker room. The Favre for Hope Foundation donated more than $130,000 to the USM Athletic Foundation. Of course, charities are entitled to donate to universities, but this violated federal charity law, or at least it likely violated charity law. This hasn't been determined yet, because that is not the explicit mission statement nor any of the things that the charity had promised to do. It is designed to provide kids with food, which this, of course, did not do. So in addition to the Mississippi welfare scandal, in addition to taking on money for speeches, and in addition to, apparently knowing that all of this is a problem, he funneled charity money into what must be the best volleyball facility on the planet. So that's my party foul.
Bounty Gate was God's plan.
Arif uses the party foul to discuss like real problems in society, and we're talking about Frankie Lasagna.
Hey, the Frankie Lasagna was my first pick too. So
I did say right away, let's get the easy one out of the way right away. I figured everybody would have that at the top of the list.
I'm going to go with anyone who thinks Cooper Rush should start over Dak Prescott. Cowboys media at large, why is this a talking point? What are you guys doing?
What? Because Jerry Jones said it. That's why it's a talking point.
Oh my God. Then it goes to Jerry Jones. I didn't know. I just thought it was like bluster from sports talk radio.
Yeah, I mean, Rush should outright start over Dak Prescott, but he's like, yeah, at the end of this, we're going to have a quarterback controversy. I love it. And it's like, okay. Thanks.
Oh my God, Jerry. Yeah. Okay. That is so much worse than I thought. And I already was
hands on head mode.
Foul.
It's great. Yeah. Speaking of party fouls, didn't Jerry Jones have a viral photo of him trying to take a selfie and going horribly wrong? I think that happened this week. That's go back
of,
and look at
the,
it.
Of the Jerry Jones viral photos, that's not the one I immediately thought of. I'm going to be honest.
There's probably a collection out there, and I do not care to look through them. But we're going to go
with
that.
I don't
want
to lose our iTunes ratings by talking about them in detail.
That was an insane segment. Thank you for sticking with us, the two of you who probably lasted through that. And we'll talk to you on Monday. Luke Braun will be in London. Arif Hasan will be coming back from London. We'll sort things out, maybe get some guests on next week as our travel schedules get arranged. Luke Inman, you'll be in the States. Breakfast at my place, Luke, Sunday. Get some bacon going, some French toast.
Lock it up, baby.
All right, perfect. We're going to have a great time. For Luke Inman, Luke Braun, Arif Hasan, and big thanks to Ron Johnson, I'm Sam Ekstrom. Thanks for watching. And so long. Enjoy the game.